Garth's fall intensified the bitterness of flyers and woodwingers both. The afternoon games, stunts conducted in an increasingly dark and stormy cloud, had little zest to them. An Easterner from Kite's Landing was the grand winner, but she had scant competition, as many of the flyers decided to drop out at the last moment. A few of those not directly involved in challenges were even seen taking wing for their home islands. Care, the only woodwinger who bothered to attend the games, reported that the spectators had grown sparse as well, and all their talk was of Garth. Sina tried to encourage the students, but it was a formidable task. Cher and Leia were philosophical about their chances, neither expecting to win. But Damon was in a dismal condition, and Care seemed ready to slink off and throw himself into the sea. Srella was nearly as despondent. She was tired and withdrawn for most of the afternoon, and that evening she quarrelled with Val. It was just after dinner. Damon was setting up his Geechee board and looking for an opponent, and Leia had gotten out her pipes again. Val found Srella sitting with Maris on the beach, and joined them uninvited. "Let's walk down to the tavern," he suggested to Srella, "and celebrate our victories. I want to get free of these losers, and hear what people are saying about us, maybe even get down some bets for tomorrow."
"I've got no victory to celebrate," Srella replied sullenly. "I flew horribly. Garth was much better than I was. I didn't deserve to win."
"You win or you lose, Srella," Val said. "What you deserve has nothing to do with it. Come on."
He tried to take her by the hand and pull her to her feet, but Srella yanked loose of him angrily.
"Don't you even care about what happened to Garth?"
"Not particularly."
"You shouldn't either. As I recall, the last thing you said to him was how much you hated him. It would have gone better for you if he'd drowned. Then they would have to give you his wings. As it is, they'll try to find some way to cheat you out of them."
Maris, listening, began to lose her temper.
"Stop it, Val," she said. "Keep out of this, flyer," he snapped. "This is between us."
Srella jumped to her feet.
"Why are you always so hateful? You're cruel to Maris all the time, and she's only tried to help you. And the things you've been saying about Garth. Garth was nice to me, and what did I do? I challenged him, and now he almost died, and you're saying awful things about him. Don't you say another word, don't you?"
Val's face became an expressionless mask.
"I see," he said flatly. "Suit yourself. If you care so much for flyers, go visit Garth and tell him to keep his wings. I'll celebrate by myself."
He turned away and began to stride across the sand toward the sea road that would take him to his tavern. Maris took Srella's hand.
"Would you like to visit Garth?" she said impulsively.
"Could we?"
Maris nodded. He and Risa share a big house a half mile up the hill road. He likes to stay close to the sea and the lodge. We could go and see how he is. Srella was eager, and they set off at once. Maris had been a bit afraid of the reception they might receive when they arrived, but her own concern about Garth's condition was great enough that she was willing to take the risk. She needn't have worried. Risa beamed at them when she opened the door, and all at once began to cry, and Maris had to take her in her arms and comfort her.
"Oh, come and see him. Come and see him," Risa kept saying through her tears. "He'll be so glad."
Garth was propped up in bed against a mountain of pillows, a shaggy woolen blanket thrown over his legs. His face was frighteningly pale and puffy, but when he saw them in the doorway, his smile was real enough.
"Ah," he boomed, his voice loud as ever. "Maris, and the little demon who's out to take my wings."
He waved them to his side.
"Come and sit and talk to me. Risa does nothing but fuss and fret, and she won't even bring me any of her ale."
Maris smiled. "You don't need any ale," she said primly, as she walked to his bedside and kissed him lightly on the brow. Srella hung back by the door, however. When he saw that, Garth's face turned serious.
"Ah, Srella," he said, "don't be frightened. I'm not angry with you."
She came forward to stand by Maris.
"You're not?" No, Garth said firmly. Risa, bring them seats.
His sister did as he asked, and when they were seated, Garth resumed.
Oh, I was furious when you challenged me. Hurt, too. I can't deny that.
I'm sorry, Srella blurted. I didn't want to hurt you. I don't hate you, what I said that night at the lodge.
He waved her quiet.
I know that. And you needn't be sorry. The water was terribly cold out there, but maybe it woke me up a bit, and I've had all afternoon to lie here and think. I've been a fool, and I'm lucky I've the breath to say so. I did wrong to keep it secret, the way that I was feeling, and you did right to name me when you knew.
He shook his head.
I couldn't accept being landbound, you know. I loved the flying too much, all my friends, the travel. But it's over. My little swim proved that. The only question is whether I'm to be a live landbound or a drowned flyer at the end of it all. Before today, I'd always managed to shrug off the pain, get where I was going. But this morning, it was miserable. Shooting pains in me arms and legs. But I don't want to talk about that. Bad enough it happened.
He reached across and took Srella by the hand.
What I mean to say, Srella, is that I can't compete tomorrow. And I wouldn't if I could. Risa and the sea have brought me to my senses. The wings are yours.
Srella could hardly believe him. She stared at him wide-eyed, and a tremulous smile broke across her face.
What will you do, Garth? Marys asked.
He grimaced.
That depends on the healers, he said. Seems to me I have three choices. Maybe I'll be a corpse, and maybe I'll be a cripple. But if I can find a healer who knows what he's about, I thought I might try my hand at trade. I've got enough iron put aside to buy myself a ship, and I could travel that way, see other islands. Though I'm half scared out of me wits at the idea of travelling by sea.
He chuckled.
You and Dor used to kid me about being a trader. You remember, Marys? Said I'd trade my wings if the deal was good enough, just because I like to swap a little now and again. Well, some trader I turned out to be. Here, Srella gets my wings and doesn't give me anything.
He laughed, and Marys found herself joining him. They talked for over an hour about traders and sailors, and finally flyers, relaxing as they laughed at Garth's jokes and exchanged gossip.
"Corm is livid about your friend Val," Garth said at one point, "and I can't say I blame him. He's a good enough flyer that he never considered that he might lose his wings, and here it seems he's lost them, and to one wing of all people. Did you have anything to do with that, Marys?"
She shook her head. "Hardly. All Val's idea. He'll never admit it, but I think he wanted to beat a flyer of the top rank to make them forget about Arry. The fact that Corm's wife sits among the judges just added an extra flair to the feat, and of course it gave him a convenient excuse if he lost. He could blame a defeat on flyer prejudice. Garth nodded and made a rude joke about Corm, then turned to his sister.
Risa, why don't you show Srella our house?
Risa took the hint.
Yes, do come and see, she said.
Srella followed her from the room.
She's nice, Garth said when they were gone. And she does remind me an awful lot of you, Marys. Do you remember when we first met?
Marys smiled at him. I remember. It was my first flight to the Eyrie, and there was a party that night.
Raven was there too. That was where he did his trick.
I've never forgotten it, Marys said.
Did you teach it to One Wing?
No.
Garth laughed. Everyone is certain you did. We all remember how impressed you were by Raven. Coll even made a song about him, didn't he?
Marys smiled. Yes. Garth started to say something else, then thought better of it. For a long moment the room was filled with silence, and the smile slowly faded on Garth's face. He began to cry, fighting it and losing. He reached out his big hands for her, and Marys came and sat on the edge of the bed, and hugged him, and ran her hands across his brow.
I knew. I didn't want Srella to see me. Oh, Marys, it's so damn rotten. So damned.
Oh, Garth, she whispered, kissing him lightly and fighting to hold back her own tears. She felt so helpless. Briefly, she thought of what it would be like if she were in Garth's place. She trembled and pushed the thought away and hugged him again all the harder.
"Come and see me," he said. You know how, when you don't fly, you can't go to the Eyrie, you know. Bad enough to lose your freedom and the wind. But I don't want to lose you, too, and my other friends, just because... Oh, damn these tears. Visit me, Maris. Promise.
I promise, Garth, she said, trying to keep her voice light. Unless you gain so much weight that I can't stand to look at you. Beneath his tears, he laughed.
Ah, he said. Here. And just when I thought I could get fat in peace, you.
Footsteps sounded outside. Risa and Srella returning, and Garth quickly used the blanket to dry his tears.
Go, he said, smiling again. Go. I'm tired. You've exhausted me. But come back tomorrow when it's all over, and tell me how the games went.
Maris nodded, and Srella came up to her side and bent to give Garth a quick, shy kiss before they left. They walked the half mile back to the village slowly, talking as they went and savouring the cool wind that moved through the night. They spoke of Garth and a little bit of Val, and Srella mentioned the wings, her wings, with wonder in her voice.
I'm a flyer, she said happily. It's really true.
But it was not that simple. Sina was waiting for them inside their cabin, sitting on the edge of a bed and looking impatient. She rose when they entered.
Where have you been?
We went to see how Garth is, Maris answered. Is anything wrong?
I don't know. We've been summoned up to the lodge house by the judges.
She gave Srella a meaningful look with her good eye.
All three of us. And we're late.
They left at once. On the way, Maris told Sina what Garth had said about giving up the wings, but the old teacher did not seem pleased.
Well, we shall see about that, she said. I would not go flying off with them just yet.
The flyers were not partying tonight. The main room of the lodge was sparsely populated, only a half-dozen western flyers Maris knew vaguely, sitting and drinking, and the atmosphere was anything but festive. One of them stood up when Maris and the others entered.
In the back room, he said.
The five judges were squabbling around a circular table, but they broke off in mid-argument when the door opened. Shally stood up.
Maris, Sina, Srella, do come in, she said, and close the door.
They took seats around the table, and Shally folded her hands neatly in front of her as she resumed.
We summoned you because we have a dispute, and it involves young Srella here, and you have a right to state your views.
Garth has sent word that he will not fly tomorrow.
We know, Maris broke in. We just came from him.
Good, Shally said. Then perhaps you understand our problem. We must decide what to do with the wings. Srella looked stricken.
They're mine, she said. Garth said so.
The landsman of Skulney was drumming his fingers on the table and frowning.
The wings are not Garth's to give, he said loudly. Here, child, I will ask you a question. If you're given the wings, will you promise to make a home here and fly for Skulney?
Srella did not flinch under his intense gaze, Maris noted with approval.
No, she answered bluntly. I couldn't. I mean, Skulney's nice, I'm sure, but this isn't my home. I'm going to return to Sadden with the wings, to Velith, the little island where I was born.
The landsman shook his head violently.
No, no, no. You may return to this southern rock if you wish, but if you do, it will be without the wings.
He looked at the other judges.
See? I gave her a chance. I insist.
Sina thumped a fist on the table.
What is this? What is going on? Srella has a right to the wings, more right than anyone else. She challenged Garth and he has failed the test. How can you speak of not giving her the wings?
She looked from judge to judge furiously. Shally, who seemed to be the spokesman, gave an apologetic shrug. "We have a disagreement," she said. "The question is how tomorrow's contest should be scored. Some of us feel that if Garth does not fly, Sweller must be given the victory by forfeit. But the landsman is of the opinion that we cannot vote on a contest in which only one flyer flies. He insists that the decision be made on the basis of the two legs already completed, and on them alone. If that is done, Garth is presently ahead 6 stones to 5, and would retain the wings."
"But Garth has renounced the wings," Maris said. "He can't fly, he's too ill."
"The law provides for that," the landsman said. "If a flyer is sick, his wings are given over to the landsman and the island's other flyers to dispose of, provided he or she has no heir. We will give the wings to someone worthy of them, someone who is willing to take up residence in Skulney. I offered that chance to the girl here, and you all heard her answer. It must be someone else, then."
"We had hoped that Sweller would consent to remain on Skulney," Shally said. "That would have resolved our differences."
"No," Sweller repeated stubbornly, but she looked miserable.
"What you propose is a cheat,"
Sina said bitterly to the landsman.
"I am inclined to agree with that," put in the big man from the Outer Islands. He ran his fingers through unkempt blonde hair. "The only reason Garth stands ahead now is because you cast a stone for him today, even after he fell into the ocean, landsman. That was hardly fair."
"I judged it fair," the landsman said angrily.
"Garth wants Sweller to take his wings," Maris said. "Don't his wishes matter in this?"
"No," the landsman said. "The wings were never his alone. They are a trust. They belong to all the people of Skulney."
He looked around at his fellow judges, imploring.
"It is not fair to give them away to this southerner, to reduce Skulney to only 2 flyers without cause. Listen to me. If Garth had been well, he would have defended his wings ably against any challenge, and it never would have come to this. If he had been sick and had come to me and told me, as your own flyer law requires, then by now we would have found someone else to wear the wings, someone capable of retaining them for Skulney. It is only because Garth chose to conceal his condition that we are in this predicament. Will you punish all the folk of my island because a flyer kept a secret?"
Maris had to admit that there was some justice in the argument. The judges seemed swayed too.
"What you say is true," said the small woman from Southern. "I would be glad to see a new set of wings come south, but your claim is hard to deny."
"Srella has rights too," Sina insisted. "You must be fair to her."
"If you give the wings to the landsman," Maris added, "you will be taking away her right to challenge. She's only down 1 stone. She has an excellent chance." Then Sweller spoke up.
"I didn't earn the wings," she said uncertainly. "I was ashamed of the way I flew today. But I could win them fairly if I had another chance. I know I could. Garth wants me to."
Shally sighed. "Sweller, my dear, it isn't that simple. We can't start the whole competition over for your sake."
"She should get the wings," the Outer Islander grumbled. "Here, I cast tomorrow's pebble for her already. That makes it 6-6. Will anyone join me?"
He looked around.
"There are no pebbles here to cast," the landsman snapped. "And you cannot have a contest with only one flyer."
He crossed his arms and sat back, scowling.
"I fear I must vote with the landsman," the southerner said, "lest I be charged with unfairly favouring a neighbour."
That left Shally and the woman from Easton, both of whom looked hesitant.
"Isn't there some way we can be fair to all?" Shally said.
Maris looked at Sweller and touched her on her arm.
"Are you truly willing to fly again in contest, to try to earn the wings?"
"Yes," Sweller said. "I want to win them right. I want to deserve them, no matter what Val says."
Maris nodded and turned back to the judges.
"Then I have a proposition for you," she said. "Landsman, you have 2 other flyers on Skulney. Do you think them able enough?"
"Yes," he asked suspiciously. "What of it?"
"Only this,"
I propose that you resume the match, keep the score as it stands with Srella down one stone. But since Garth cannot fly, name a proxy for him, another of your flyers, to bear wings in his place. If your proxy wins, then Skulney retains the wings and you can award them to whomever you choose. If Srella wins, well, then no one can dispute her right to go south as a flyer. What do you say? The landsman thought it over for a minute.
Well, he said, I could accept that. Jirel can fly in Garth's stead. If this girl can outfly her, then she's earned her place, though it will not make me happy.
Shally looked immensely relieved. An excellent suggestion, she said, smiling. I knew we could count on Maris for good sense. Are we agreed, then? The Easterner said quickly. All of the judges nodded, except the Outer Islander, who shook his head again and muttered, "The girl should get the wings. The man fell into the ocean." But he did not dissent too loudly. Outside the lodge, in the cool night air, a thin rain had begun to fall. But Sina stopped them anyway, looking troubled.
"Srella," she said, leaning on her cane, "are you certain this is what you want? You might lose the wings this way. Jirel is said to be a good flyer, and perhaps we could have won the judges to our side if we'd argued longer."
"No," Srella said gravely. "No, I want it this way."
Sina looked her in the eye for a long time and finally nodded.
"Good," she said, satisfied. "Let's get you home, then. Tomorrow there is flying to be done."
On the third day of the competition, Maris woke before dawn, confused by the dark and the cold, and aware that something was wrong. Someone was pounding on the door.
"Maris," Srella said from the next bed, "should I get it?"
Maris could not see her. It was well before dawn and none of their candles were lit.
"No," Maris whispered, "quiet."
She was afraid. The pounding went on and on without let-up, and Maris remembered the dead rainbirds that had been left for them and wondered who was on the other side of the door at this hour, trying so angrily to get them to open it. She climbed out of bed and padded across the room, and in the dark she managed to locate the blade she'd used to pry free the birds. It was nothing, a little metal table knife, not a fighting blade at all, but it gave her confidence. Only then did she go to the door.
"Who's there?" she demanded. "Who is it?"
The pounding stopped.
"Ragin,"
said a deep voice she did not recognize.
"Ragin? I know no Ragin. What do you want?"
"I'm from the Iron Axe," the voice said. "You know Val, the one who's been staying with me?"
Maris felt her fears drain away, and she hurried to open the door. The man standing in the starlight was gaunt and stooped, with a hook nose and a dirty beard, but he was suddenly familiar to her, the barkeep from Val's tavern. "What is it? Is something wrong?"
"I was closing up, and your friend hadn't been in yet. Thought he'd just found some pretty to sleep with, but then I found him outside, lying in the back. Somebody hurt him bad."
"Val,"
Srella said. She rushed to the door.
"Where is he? Is he all right?"
"He's up in his room," Ragin said. "I dragged him up the stairs, and it wasn't easy. But I remembered he knew people up here, so I thought I'd better come and ask around, and they sent me here. You going to come down?" "I don't know what to do for him."
"Right away," Maris said urgently. "Srella, get dressed." She hurried to collect her own clothes and slipped into them, and shortly they were hurrying down the sea road. Maris had a lantern in one hand. The road ran along the seaside cliffs for part of its length, and a misstep in the dark could be fatal. The tavern was dark and shuttered, the front door braced from inside with a heavy wooden beam. Ragin left them standing in front of it and vanished around the back to enter by what he called his secret way. When he opened the door from the inside, he said,
"Got to lock up good. Lots of hard types around here. I got customers you wouldn't believe, flyers."
They hardly listened. Srella ran up the stairs to the room she had sometimes shared with Val, and Maris came close behind. Srella was lighting a candle by Val's bedside when Maris caught up with her. Flickering ruddy light filled the small room,
and the shape huddled beneath the blankets moved with a small animal whimper. Srella set down the candle and pulled off the blankets. Val's eyes found her, and he seemed to recognize her. His left arm clutched at her hand desperately, but when he tried to speak, the only sounds he could make were choking, pain-racked sobs. Maris felt sick. He'd been beaten savagely about the head and shoulders, and his face was an unrecognizable mass of swelling and bruises. A gash along one cheek was still bleeding, and he had dried blood all over his shirt and jaw. His mouth was bloody, too, when he opened it and tried to speak.
"Val!"
Srella cried, weeping. She touched his brow, and he shrank away from her hand, trying to say something. Maris came closer. Val was holding Srella tight with his left hand, clutching at her, pulling. But his right arm just lay still along his side, and there was something wrong. Blood on the sheet beneath it. The angle at which it lay was impossible, and his jacket was ripped, bloody. She knelt by the right side of the bed and touched his arm gingerly, and Val shrieked so loudly that Srella jumped away, terrified. It was only then that Maris saw the jagged edge of bone peeking through his skin and clothing. Ragin was observing them from the doorway.
"His arm's broke. Don't touch it," he said helpfully. "He screams when you do. You should have heard the noise he made when I carried him up here. I think his leg's broke too, but I'm not sure."
Val had quieted, but his breath came in painful gasps. Maris was on her feet.
"Why didn't you call a healer?" she demanded of Ragin. "Why didn't you give him something for the pain?"
Ragin drew back, shocked, as if those ideas had never occurred to him.
"I got you, didn't I? Who's going to pay a healer? He's not, that's for sure. Don't have near enough. I went through his things."
Maris balled her fists and tried to control her fury. "You're going to go and fetch a healer right now," she said. "And I don't care if you have to run 10 miles, you're going to do it fast. If you don't, I swear I'll talk to the landsman and have this place closed."
"Flyers," the barkeep spat. "Throwing your weight around, eh? Well, I'll go, but who's going to pay this healer? That's what I want to know, and he'll want to know too."
"Damn you," Maris said. "I'll pay, damn you, I'll pay. He's a flyer, and if his bones don't heal right, if they aren't taken care of, he'll never fly again. Now hurry." Ragin gave her a last sour look and turned for the stairs. Maris went back to Val's bedside. He was making whimpering noises and trying to move, but every motion seemed to rack him with pain.
"Can't we help him?"
Srella said, glancing up at Maris. "Yes," Maris said. "This is a tavern, after all. Go downstairs and find the stock. Bring up a few bottles. That should help a little with the pain until the healer arrives." Srella nodded and started for the door.
"What should I bring?" she asked. "Wine?"
"No, we need something stronger. Look for some brandy, or that liquor from Poeet. What do they call it? They make it from grain and potatoes." Srella nodded and was gone. Shortly she returned with 3 bottles of local brandy and an unmarked flask that gave off a pungent, potent smell.
"Strong stuff," Maris said.
She tasted it herself, then had Srella hold up Val's head while she dribbled it into his mouth. He seemed anxious to cooperate, sucking down the drink eagerly as they took turns pouring it into him. When Ragin finally returned with a healer more than an hour later, Val had passed out.
"Here's your healer,"
the barkeep said. He took one look at the empty bottles on the floor and added,
"You'll pay for those too, flyer."
When the healer had set Val's arm and leg, Ragin had been right, it was broken as well, though not as badly, and splinted them and treated his swollen face, he gave Maris a small bottle full of a dark green liquid.
"This is better than brandy," he said. "It will numb the pain and let him sleep."
He departed, leaving Maris and Srella alone with Val.
"It was flyers, wasn't it?"
Srella asked tearfully as they sat together in the smoky, candle-lit room. "One arm and one leg broken, and the other side not touched," Maris said angrily. "Yes, that says flyer to me. I don't think any flyer could have done this personally, but I suspect it was a flyer who had it done. On a sudden impulse, Maris moved to where Val's blood-stained, torn clothing had been piled and rummaged through it. Just as I thought, his knife is gone. Maybe they took it. Or maybe he just had it in his hand and dropped it.
I hope he cut them, whoever it was, Srella said. Do you think it was Corm? Because Val was going to take his wings tomorrow?
Today, Maris said ruefully, glancing toward the window. The first blush of dawn was visible against the eastern sky. But no, it wasn't Corm. Not that Corm wouldn't gladly destroy Val if he could, but he'd do it legally, not like this. Corm is too proud to resort to beatings.
Who, then?
Maris shook her head. I don't know, Srella. Some sick person, obviously. Maybe a friend of Corm's, or a friend of Ari's. Maybe Arak or one of his friends. Val made a lot of enemies.
He wanted me to go with him, Srella said guiltily, but I went to see Garth instead. If I had gone with him like he wanted, this wouldn't have happened.
If you had gone with him, Maris said, you'd probably be lying there broken and bleeding as well.
Srella, love, remember those rainbirds they left for us? They wanted to tell us something. You're a one-wing, too.
She glanced out toward the dawn. And so am I. Maybe it's time I admitted it. I'm half a flyer, and that's all I'll ever be. She smiled for Srella. But I guess what matters is what half. Srella seemed puzzled, but Maris said, No more talk. You still have a few hours before the competition opens, and I want you to try to get some sleep. You have to win your wings today, remember?
I can't. Srella protested. Not now.
Especially now, Maris said. Whoever had this done to Val would be delighted to know that it lost you your wings as well as his. Do you want that?
No,
Srella said. Then sleep. Later, while Srella slept, Maris looked up again at the window. The sun was half risen, its reddened face streaked with heavy dark clouds. It was going to be a good windy day, a fine day for flying. The competition was already well underway when Maris and Srella arrived. They had been delayed in the tavern when Ragin demanded immediate payment of Val's bill, and it had taken a long argument to convince him that he would get everything due him. Maris made him promise to tend to Val's needs and allow no one else up those stairs. Sina was at her usual station by the judges, watching the early contestants fly the gates. Maris sent Srella off to join the other woodwingers and hurried up the cliff. Sina was relieved to see her.
"Maris!" she exclaimed. "I was worried something was wrong. No one knew where you had gone. Are Srella and Val with you? It will be time soon. Cher is next up, in fact."
"Srella is ready to fly," Maris said. She told Sina about Val. All the strength and vitality seemed to drain from the teacher as she listened. Her good eye clouded over with tears, and she leant more heavily on her cane, and suddenly she was very old indeed.
"I did not believe," she muttered weakly. "I did not. Even when that terrible thing happened with the birds, even then I could not think they would do such a thing."
Her face was the colour of ash.
"Help me, child. I must sit down."
Maris put an arm about her for support and led her to the judge's table, where Shally looked up, concerned. "Is everything all right?"
"No," said Maris, easing Sina into a seat. "Val will not fly today," she continued, swinging around to face the judges. "Last night he was attacked and beaten at the tavern where he had a room. An arm and a leg were broken."
All of the judges looked shocked.
"How terrible," Shally said.
The Easterner swore, the Outer Islander shook his head, and the Landsman of Skulney rose.
"This is dreadful. I won't allow this on my island. We'll find whoever did it. You have my promise on that."
"A flyer did it," Maris said, "or paid for it anyway.
They broke his right arm and his right leg. One wing. You understand?
Shari frowned. Maris, this is a horrid thing. But no flyer would do such a thing. And if you mean to imply that Corm would...
Do you have proof a flyer was involved? The Easterner interrupted.
I know the tavern where Val One Wing was staying, the landsman said. The Iron Axe, was it not? That is a very bad place, with the worst sort of patrons, rough people. It could have been anyone. A drunken fight, a jealous lover, a gambling quarrel. I've seen many beatings come before me from that place.
Maris stared at him. You'll never find who did it, no matter what you promise, she said. That isn't what concerns me. I want to take Val's wings back to him tonight.
Val's wings?
I'm afraid, the southerner said. He must wait and try again next year. I am sorry he was hurt when he was so close to winning.
Close? Maris looked the length of the table, found the box she sought, picked it up and rattled it at them. 9 black stones to 1 white. That is more than close. Val had won. Even if he lost 5-0 today, he had won.
No, Shally said stubbornly. Corm deserves his chance. I won't have you cheat him of it for one wing, no matter how sorry I feel for him. Corm is very good at the gates. He might have won 10-0, 2 stones from each of us, and then he would have kept his wings.
10-0, Maris said. How likely is that?
It is possible, Shally said.
It is, echoed the Easterner. We can't give the victory to One Wing. It would not be fair to Corm, who has flown well for many years. I think we must declare Val forfeit.
Heads were bobbing up and down the table, but Maris only smiled. I was afraid you might take this position. She put her hands on her hips and defied them. But Val will have his wings. Luckily, there is a precedent. You set it yourselves last night with Sreller and Garth. Let the score stand and the match continue. Summon Corm. I will fly proxy for Val. And she knew they would not deny her. Maris got her wings and joined the mill of contestants, impatient and increasingly nervous. The gates had been erected during the night. 9 flimsy wooden constructions planted firmly in the sand, in a course demanding a series of difficult turns and tacking manoeuvres. The first gate, straight out from the Flyer's Cliff, consisted of 2 tall blackwood poles, each some 40 feet high, set 50 feet apart in the sand. A rope had been tied from the top of one pole to the top of the other. To score, the Flyer had to glide through that gate. Easy enough. But the next gate was only a few yards farther down the beach, not straight ahead, but off to one side, so the Flyer had to angle quickly before shooting past it. And the second gate was smaller, the poles just a little bit shorter, and set just a little bit closer together. So it went, the course wandering out into the shallows and then veering sharply back onto land, a twisting, wing-snapping course, with each of the 9 gates smaller than the one before, until the 9th and final gate, 2 poles barely 8 feet off the ground, set exactly 21 feet apart. A flyer's wingspan was 20 feet. No one had ever flown more than 7 gates. Even that was no mean task. Of all the flyers to try the gates this morning, the best score was 6, and that had been flown by the phenomenal Lane. Challengers traditionally flew first in this test. The Flyer was given the courtesy of knowing what score he had to beat. Wings on her shoulders, Maris watched the woodwingers make their attempts. Cher dove straight from the cliff through the first gate, coming in barely under the rope, banked sharply toward the second, but continued to descend fast, too fast. Panicking, the young woodwinger leveled off quickly to avoid hitting the ground, and suddenly started to rise, passing over the second gate instead of through it. The flyer that Cher challenged managed only 2 gates, but that was enough for the victory. Leia, watching Cher, chose a different strategy. She leapt from the cliff to circle widely above the beach, dropping down gradually,
so that she'd pass through the first gate level instead of in a descent. She began her turn well before she entered the gate proper, so that she actually swung around one pole gracefully, already heading for the second gate. She sailed smoothly through that as well, again beginning her turn early, but this time it was a sharper turn, more demanding, upwind. Leia made it well enough, and the third gate with it, but had nothing left to wrench herself around afterward. She flew peacefully out to sea, missing the fourth gate by a wide margin. A few of the spectators applauded her anyway, and her flyer rival could only manage two gates before he landed roughly in the sand, so Leia had her first triumph, though it was not enough to win a pair of wings. Damon and Arrok were announced by the crier. Both of them had trouble. Damon took the gates too fast and couldn't recover after the second in time to turn for the third. Arrok passed through the second gate too high. The upper edge of a wing grazed the rope, and it was enough to send him off balance and far off course. But even with the two-gate tie, Arrok easily retained his wings. Care, surprisingly, also managed the tie. Imitating Leia, he entered the first gate, levelled and starting his turn, and handled the second easily enough. But like Leia, he had trouble veering upwind into the third. And unlike Leia, he did not manage it. He thumped to a halt in the sand a few yards short of the gate, and the land-bound children rushed in from all sides to help him out of his wings. John of Culhall tried to avoid Care's fate by maintaining a higher altitude, but passed over and to the right of the third gate.
"Corm of Lesser Amberley," the crier was announcing. "Vow One Wing, Vow of South Arran."
Then a brief pause.
"Maris of Lesser Amberley, flying proxy for Val, Maris of Lesser Amberley."
She stood on the flyer's cliff, helpers unfolding her wings, locking each strut in place. A few dozen yards away, Corm too stood and let them work. She looked over at him, and his eyes met hers, dark, intense.
"Maris One Wing," he called bitterly. "Is this what you've come to? I'm glad Russ is not alive to see you."
"Russ would be proud," she threw back, angry, and knowing Corm had wanted to make her angry. Anger brought carelessness, and that was his only hope. 7 years ago she had outflown him in a much fiercer contest. She was confident she could outfly him today as well. Precision, control, reflexes, a feel for the wind, that was all it required, and she had them in full measure. Her wings were wide and tight, metal humming softly in the wind, and she felt utterly serene and sure of herself. She reached up, wrapped her hands around the grips, ran, jumped, soared. Up she flew, up and up, and she did a loop for the sheer joy of it, and then dove, sliding down and down through the air, riding and shifting with the little eddies and currents, angling toward the gates. She was banked sharply and wheeling as she went through the first gate, her wings drawing a silver line from the top of one pole to the bottom of the other. But she stabilized gracefully and swayed the other way for the approach to the second, slid through it fluidly. It was the feel of it, the love of it, not the thought. It was instinct and reflex and knowing the wind, and Maris was the wind. The third gate was next, the difficult upwind turn, but she snapped round easily, quickly, cleanly, then looped above the water to correct her angle on the fourth gate, and she was through that too, and the fifth was a wide, lazy downwind turn, and the sixth was almost straight ahead, not a difficult angle at all, but small, so she dropped a little and skimmed low over the sand, her wings taut and full, and the spectators were shouting and cheering. In a heartbeat, it was over. Just as the sixth gate loomed ahead of her, she hit a sink, a sudden cold downdraft that had no right being there. It pushed at her, clutched at her, just for an instant, but that was long enough for her wings to brush the ground, and then her legs were trailing through the wet sand, and she slid along bumpily before finally jolting to a halt in the shadow of the gate. A small blonde girl ran up to her and helped her to her feet, then began folding up her wings. Maris stood breathless and exhilarated. 5, then. 5 it was. Not the best score of the day, but a good score. And it was enough. Corm trailed Val by such a margin that it would not be enough for him to beat her. He had to humiliate her, crush her, collect 2 pebbles from each of the judges, and that he could not do. He knew it, too. Disheartened by her flight, he did not even come close. He failed on the 4th gate, a decisive victory for her. For Val. She felt elated as she trudged across the beach, wings folded on her back. Criers' calls ran up and down the shore. Swella stood poised on the precipice, the sun shining off the bright metal of her wings, and behind her Maris glimpsed wiry, black-haired Jirel of Skulney. Swella leapt, and Maris stood to watch, her heart flying with her, hoping, hoping. Swella banked and circled, a leisurely approach instead of the wild rush Maris had employed, and came gliding down smoothly on the same tack Leia and Care had used in their turns. Through the 1st gate, turning, levelling, wheeling now in the opposite direction, Maris felt her breath stop for a minute, and through the 2nd gate, and now a very sharp turn upwind, a clean knife thrust of a turn, as if the wind itself had changed direction at her command, and through the 3rd gate, still in control, and another hard veer, and she was through the 4th gate. People began to rise and cheer, and the 5th was as easy for her as it had been for Maris. And now it was the 6th that she was moving in on, the 6th on which Maris had failed, and her wings were swaying a bit, but then they stilled, and she came in higher than Maris, and the sink shook her, but didn't ground her, and then she was through the 6th gate, too, shouts everywhere. And the 7th demanded a split-second bank at just the right angle, and Swella did that as well, and she came around toward the 8th. And it was too narrow, the poles set too close together, and Swella was just a bit too far to one side. Her left wing hit the pole with a snap, and the wing straps shattered, even as the pole did, and Swella went sprawling on the ground. And Maris was only one of dozens running toward her. When she got there, Swella was sitting up laughing and breathing hard, surrounded by Landbound, who was shouting at her, yelling hoarse-voiced congratulations. The children pressed close to touch her wings, but Swella, her face reddened by the wind, couldn't seem to stop laughing. Maris pushed her way through the crowd and hugged her, and Swella giggled through it all. "Are you all right?" Maris asked, pushing her away and holding her at arm's length. Swella nodded furiously, still giggling. "Then what?" Swella pointed at her wing, the wing that had struck the gate. The fabric, virtually indestructible, was undamaged, but a support strut had broken. "That's easily fixed," Maris said after she'd looked it over. "No problem." "Don't you see?" Swella said, jumping to her feet. Her right wing bobbed with the motion, taut and vibrant, but her left hung limp and broken, silver tissue dragging on the sand. Maris looked and began to laugh. "One wing," she said helplessly, and they collapsed into each other's arms again, laughing. "Jirel didn't disgrace you," Maris said to Garth that night as she sat with him by his fire. He was up and about again, looking better, and drinking ale once more. "She was an admirable proxy, flew 5 gates as good as I'd done, but 5 isn't 7, of course, and it wasn't enough. Even the landsman couldn't call it a tie." "Good," Garth said. "Swella deserves the wings." "I like Swella." "Make her promise to come and visit me too." Maris smiled. "I will," she said. She's sorry she couldn't come tonight, but she wanted to go straight down to Val. "I'm to join her after I leave here. I don't relish it, but..." She sighed. Garth took a healthy swig of ale and stared into the fire for a long moment. "I feel sorry for Corm," he said. "Never liked him, but he knew how to fly." "Don't fret," Maris said. "He's bitter, but he'll recover." Shally's pregnancy will soon be too advanced for her to fly, so Corm will have the use of her wings for a few months. And if I know him, he'll bully her into sharing even after the baby comes. Next year he can challenge. It won't be Val either. Corm is cleverer than that. I'll wager he names someone like John of Culhall.
Ah, Garth said. If the damned healers ever cure me, I may name John myself.
He'll be a popular choice next year, Maris agreed. Even Care wants another chance at him, though I doubt Cena will sponsor him again until he's a lot more seasoned. She'll have better prospects to choose from next year. With the double victory by Srella and Val, Woodwings is suddenly thriving again. She'll soon have more students than she knows what to do with, Maris chuckled.
You and Corm weren't the only flyers grounded either. Barry of Poeet lost her wings in an out-of-family challenge, and Big Horror went down to her own daughter.
A flock of ex-flyers, Garth grumbled.
And a lot of one-wings, Maris added, smiling. The world is changing, Garth. Once we had only flyers and landbound.
Yes, Garth said, gulping down some more ale. Then you confused everything. Flying landbounds and grounded flyers. Where will it end?
I don't know, Maris said. She stood up. I'd stay longer, but I must go and talk to Val. And I'm long overdue on Amberley. With Shally pregnant and Corm wingless, the landsman will no doubt work me to death. But I'll find time to visit, I promise.
Good.
He grinned up at her.
Fly well now.
When she left, he was shouting to Risa for another ale. Val was propped up awkwardly in bed, his head raised just enough so that he could eat. He was spooning soup into his mouth with his left hand. Srella sat by his side holding the bowl. They both looked up when Maris entered, and Val's hand trembled, spilling hot soup on his bare chest. He cursed, and Srella helped him mop it up.
Val, Maris said, evenly nodding.
On the floor by the door she set the wings she had carried, once belonging to Corm of Lesser Amberley. Your wings. The swelling in his face had subsided enough, so that Val was beginning to look like himself again, although his puffed lip gave him an atypical sneer.
Srella told me what you did, he said with difficulty. Now I suppose you want me to thank you.
Maris folded her arms and waited.
Your friends the Flyers did this to me, you know, he said. If the bones mend crooked, I'll never use those damn wings you got me. Even if they heal properly, I'll never be as good as I was.
I know that, Maris said, and I'm sorry.
But it wasn't my friends who did this, Val. Not all Flyers are my friends, and they aren't all your enemies.
You were at the party, Val said. Maris nodded. It won't be easy, and most of the burden is on you. Reject them if you like, hate all of them, or find the ones worth knowing. It's up to you.
I'll tell you who I'm going to find, Val said. I'm going to find the ones who did this to me, and then I'm going to find whoever sent them.
Yes, Maris said. And then?
Srella found my knife, Val said simply. I dropped it in the bushes last night. But I cut one of them, well enough so I'll know her by the scar.
Where are you going when you heal? Maris said.
Val seemed thrown off stride by the sudden change of subject. I had thought Seatooth. I've heard the stories about how much the landsman there wants a flyer, but Srella tells me that the landsman of Skulney is anxious as well. I'll talk to them both, see what they offer.
Val of Seatooth, Maris said. It has a nice sound to it.
It will always be one wing, he said. Maybe for you, too.
A half-flyer, she agreed. Both of us.
But which half?
Val, you can make the landsmen bid for your services. The flyers will despise you for it, most of them. And maybe some of the younger and greedier will imitate you, and I'd hate to see that. And you can wear that knife your father gave you when you fly, even though you break one of the oldest and wisest flyer laws by doing so. It is a small point, a tradition, and the flyers again will despise you, but no one will do anything. But I tell you now, If you find who ordered you beaten and kill them with that same knife, you'll be one wing no longer. The flyers will name you outlaw and strip your wings away, and not a landsman on Windhaven will take your side or give you landing, no matter how much they need flyers.
You want me to forget? Val said.
Forget this? No, said Maris. Find them and take them to a landsman, or call a flyer court. Let your enemy be the one who loses wings and home and life, and not you. Is that such a bad alternative? Val smiled crookedly, and Maris saw he'd lost some teeth as well.
No, he said. I almost like it.
It's your choice, Maris said. You won't be flying for a good while, so you'll have time to think about it. I think you're intelligent enough to use that time. She looked to Srella.
I must return to Lesser Amberley. It's on your way if you're going back to Southern. Will you fly with me and spend a day in my home?
Srella nodded eagerly.
Yes, I'd love... That is, if Val will be all right.
Flyers have unlimited credit, Val said. If I promise Ragan enough iron, he'll nurse me better than my own parent.
I'll go then, Srella said. But I'll see you again, Val, won't I? We both have wings now.
Yes, Val said. Go fly with yours. I'll look at mine.
Srella kissed him and crossed the room to where Maris stood. They started out the door.
Maris?
Val called sharply. She turned at the sound of his voice, in time to see his left hand reach awkwardly behind his head, under the pillow, and come whipping out with frightening speed. The long blade sliced through the air and struck the doorframe, not a foot from Maris's head. But the knife was ornamental obsidian, bright and black and sharp, but not resilient, and it shattered when it struck.
Maris must have looked terrified. Val was smiling.
It was never my father's, he said. My father never owned anything. I stole it from Eric.
Across the room their eyes met, and Val laughed painfully.
Get rid of it for me, will you? One wing.
Maris smiled and bent to pick up the pieces.